This is going to sound completely idiotic. I didn't realize Nashville was Central Time. So I'm, you know, this morning I'm doing some work and printing out PPs for Saturday, and you know, I said, all right, I'll get there, you know, I'll get there about 7:45, and they've got right now, actually, they're having a draw, even though the post positions are set for the Iroquois card, and I'm completely oblivious. And Casey texted me and he said, "Are you connected?" I said, "What do you mean?" I said, "It's not even 8 o'clock," and then it was. By the time I arrived here and I asked the question to Pepe here that is Nashville Central, and the answer is yes. one of those things that it never even occurred to me that we had somehow gotten into Central Time. Kentucky Downs, when we're at Kentucky Downs, is that Central? That's not Central. That's Eastern. I guess we're a little bit west of that, but not, you wouldn't think enough to transfer into a new time zone. It's funny because I knew Memphis was Central, but I didn't think that Nashville was. Unbelievable. Well, just because, you know, I went right through Franklin, Kentucky yesterday on the drive down after the show from Louisville, and I was in that mindset. It's great to be here, and Saturday should be really entertaining. Hope the weather holds up. This feels like it's going to be warm enough to produce a couple of thunderstorms the next couple of days, but hopefully that does not come on an untimely basis, and we'll have a little bit of Iroquois previewing today, and then more tomorrow. But it is a absolutely just beautiful layout, kind of similar to Far Hills. It's got the natural, it's got the hill, and then a kind of the natural bowl. Seems like a bigger layout than that. This is a mammoth event. The more I have found out about Saturday and the Iroquois steeplechase, the more I'm realizing that it is the spring social event of the year in Nashville. And we're also a fairly good 15 minutes, 20 minutes west of the city. 15 minutes, Pep? This is within the city limits. Holy cow. So this is like the Kansas City of Tennessee. Kansas City has got these gigantic spread. Oh, my God, that's interesting. All right, well, we're going to hear all the interesting details of this mammoth park, too. I mean, it's actually two parks. And then the two Warners, or is it one park, with two different Warners associated with it, the brothers, and this dates back to 1900. Really quite lovely, the golf courses and you know, all kinds of public areas. So looking forward to this portion of the trip, and kind of a light-hearted steeplechase adventure nestled between Derby and Preakness. And of course, meanwhile, Preakness and the Preakness card news starts to, you know, continues to develop, and some very nice undercard. I actually was reading Dave Joseph's kind of pre-advance of Monday's draw, and the cards seem like they're shaping up really well for the 2 days. Black Eyed Susan Day on Friday, and Preakness Day on Sunday, and there's no shortage of other venues to be prepared for. As I mentioned yesterday, and I was again perusing PPs and looking at overnights, and Monmouth Park kicks off. We'll probably save the Monmouth preview for tomorrow. Hoping to talk to Stu Slagle today because, excuse me, Prairie Meadows kicks off today. They've got a 9-race card to get their season started. That kicks off tomorrow, I should say. And Saturday, the Goldfinch, 10-horse field, the 3-year-old fillies, as the first part of the stake schedule. So we'll hopefully talk to Stu. Going to talk to the Clancys. Only one Clancy making their way to Nashville. Sean actually well represented on the card for Percy Warner. He's in the feature, and the Iroquois itself, $200,000 grade one, came up very good. Snap decision, comes back out of the Temple Guafmi win, and Sean sends City Dreamer, second start of the year. Got a little bit of everything. Scaramanga shows up out of Cheltenham for Willie Mullins. Yeah, so that gives you an idea of how good this should be. Just a little bit, actually, I think one, yeah, I think there's one, yeah, eight different outfits represented. Sometimes you get, you know, multiple entries. But we'll talk to Sean and Joe Clancy. Joe is staying in the region back home for Willowdale. So I'm going to put them on together. They start at Pimlico today. The Preakness meet kicks off at 12:25 today, 8-race card. And they actually got a nice card tomorrow, too. And, of course, you know, Belmont and Churchill. Churchill back underway today. Very good Preakness distance allowance today. Mile and 3/16 as the 7th. Expecting to talk to Rusty Arnold. Rusty's got spin wheel in here. Field of 12, full field with an AE from McPeak. And favorite is Giant Game, who scratched going back to Saturday for Dale Romans. It's a nice card. Third level allowance, too. Mile and 1/8 on the grass, 9-horse field. So, Churchill back in action, and Belmont. Belmont card is good today, too. We're going to talk to Jeff Franklin, of course. Probably do a little Derby recap, see how Crafty's Derby went. But I had to pick the two races we're going to talk about for winning with Thoroughgraph. And I went ahead and took the two stakes that run back-to-back on Saturday at Belmont, the Man of War and the Peter Pan. And they're both good. Mile and 3/8 for the Man of War. There's Charlie Appleby again. There's no stopping Appleby. Brendan Walsh, Verstappen, who we talked about yesterday when we visited, or was that Tuesday? Christophe Clement, Soldier Rising, and Channel Maker, of course, dances every dance, 4-time winner at Belmont. Mike Lauer invades with Strong Tide. And, of course, third in the Belmont Gold Cup last year and got a little bit of a prep for this in the Temperance Hill, the mile-and-a-half traditional season-ending or season near-season-ending event at Oaklawn. Mike Maker with Value Engineering for Michael Way and Phil Forte. There's that name again. can't escape Forte. The Peter Pan, though, obviously some horses prepping toward the Belmont and this came up really good. There is a cross entry in Slip Mahoney, Al Gold's and Brad Cox's Airgate colt. He's cross entered in the Long Branch opening day Saturday at Monmouth. We'll talk Monmouth tomorrow, but Slip Mahoney is a cross entrant, so keep that in mind. And the fact that Henry Q shows up in the field for the Peter Pan kind of indicates that they're going to bypass, you would think, Doug O'Neill and the Del Mar group are bypassing Preakness. They've shown up as a possible for Preakness. They enter here, and maybe the decision is still pending, the Mind That Bird Derby winner. Bishop's Bay, Brad Cox stretches out a little bit more. The 2-for-2 Uncle Mo, that absolutely was one of the highlights of that Risen Star card, which now has turned out to be, the Risen Star has turned out to be super key, obviously. It's a good group. Bill Morey's going to try Asmodeus, who hasn't gone beyond a mile, a Cairo Prince. Broke his maiden last, but actually ran a big fig second to register if you go back to February. And Pletcher and Mandy Pope, Classic Catch. It's a good group. Jen Antonucci comes up with Archangelo, an Airgate colt that broke the maiden at Gulfstream in mid-March. And Game Change for Shug. We didn't get to Game Change with Shug. And Summer Cause for Christophe Clement, who was third in the Tessio. And, of course, Perform is going ahead and trying the Preakness. So those will be the two races that Jeff and I discuss later. And I actually have not had a chance to, I only got the figs just a little bit ago for Saturday. But I thought it'd be fun. We get a turf race in, we get a dirt race, three-year-olds, three-year-old pattern development, and a chance to, you know, play a double, right? Why not? The other story, one of the other stories that has come to head this morning is the upcoming move away, Rich Strike moving out of the Eric Reed barn. And this is a question, a case of Eric Reed essentially quitting the barn. And this is another, not that the jockey pants situation was a controversy per se, but this thing involves something with marketing rights, and I only saw the the note that came out from Rick Dawson. So we will follow up on that. It's too bad. No matter what, they're not taking the Derby win away from from Eric Reed. But the details, I'm anxious to see what the details are in this. This has to do with marketing rights. Amazing. Turn our attention to a couple of conversations that have been pending, and that includes a visit with Rusty Arnold, I hope. Rusty ended up traveling earlier than expected yesterday. So I want to talk to him, though, about red carpet ready and her win. I mean, it is the season when you start to switch up and, you know, horses that have proven out to be better going shorter distances. And that's what it feels like with red carpet ready. And there's plenty of opportunities. And everybody, when it comes to 3-year-old fillies, everybody's big goal is certainly the test in the summer. So, well, wow, we are in a bit of a pickle because I managed to leave the I think I left the laptop. Yep, there it is. No laptop. Holy cow! Well, this is not exactly a smooth start, really, to the visit to Nashville. I did that once actually at Pimlico too, where I got all the way from the hotel to Pimlico and realized I had left the, yeah, no doubt, it's not there. All right, well, that throws us that'll only make things a little bit more complicated. All right. Good morning. There's going to be, there'll be connections from all the races coming in here. Where this is the racing office for the Iroquois. So there'll be any number of visitors. Let me see if we can't switch up, because that there's no reason to. To not go forward here. Bear with me this morning here as we're. You know when you see in the chart, you know the. Hey. You. Yeah. Sorry. We're gonna pick up Joe Clancy, and Sean's gonna join us at 10:30. So don't worry. I am gonna give Sean the business that I'm here ahead of him. And Joe Clancy's not coming at all. Joe, good morning.
Morning. How are you?
I'm good.
And you're an hour ahead of schedule. What are you doing? You're in Tennessee because it's.
let me tell you something. Nobody told me that this was Central Time here. I'm completely flummoxed. I got to tell you.
Well, wait. It's 8:30 there.
It. Yes, it is.
It's 9:30 here, and you said you were calling me at 10:30.
I'm telling you, it's a disaster. The funny thing is, I should be fresh and you know, fit and ready. I literally slept 11 hours, and then I woke up and started to do some work, and I'm leisurely preparing, and. I didn't realize I was an hour behind because it was actually approaching 9, and I thought it was approaching 8. It was very strange. Unbelievable.
You can't really make this stuff up. I'm trying to come up with a snappy something, but no, I don't know. You can't make this is like a Seinfeld plot.
Well,
this is how the guy missed the marathon at Seinfeld.
Is that right? A time difference?
It was a clock, the alarm clock situation. Yes.
Well, and the funniest part is that somebody, whoever was in the room, in Brentwood, whoever left the room last, they set the alarm, actually, and I should have taken it seriously when it went off at I was up at 5, or which turns out to be 6. too fun, and I am not kidding. I got here, got to the hotel, and I checked out the venue, which is spectacular, and I got to that hotel, and I was asleep by 7 o'clock and slept 11 hours, which I think is, you know, that's a post-derby sort of, blowout kind of a night. Too much.
All right, well, good. We're fresh. We're ready to go.
All right. Well, you're not coming, though. I'll talk to Sean. We'll talk to Sean next hour. He's on a horse, but... Joe, this venue, and I'm looking forward, to hearing more, details. But I had been warned that this was, on a par or even more grandiose than Far Hills,
it's a beautiful spot for sure. The one of the cool things to me is that it's sort of within the city limits. I mean, it's in a city park, and they've managed to preserve this race course dating to the 40s and done nothing but enhance it since then. And it's a neat place for sure.
And you're staying put for Willowdale at home.
Yes, so I'm staying local and going to Willowdale at home. For any number of reasons. My parents are in their 80s. They like to go to Willowdale, so I'm going to put them in the car and take them. We're going to have we'll have the Iroquois queued up as long as the cell phone reception holds out.
Excellent.
And going over there. And it's a local meet for us.
Very nice. I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about, what the end of the timber season or... look ahead to what happened here or what's happening here, and then also, of course, I need your Derby recapping.
The Derby recapping is, I thought I liked Forte before the Derby, and then discounted the horse who ran really well against him in Florida. So there you go. There's your handicapping lesson for the day, right? And he was impressive. I love to watch the replay and just watch how Javier Castellano worked out that trip, the horse did everything right. So did the jock, and he came running. And I was really happy for Javier. We've covered him forever, it seems like, in Saratoga and along the different trails of races, the Triple Crown races, Breeders' Cup races, and everything. To have him win a Derby, you could really tell how much it meant to him. And I couldn't have been happier for somebody to get their first Derby.
And that, that's a uniform response, actually.
I'm sure.
Literally the first thing I thought of when they hit the wire and I said, oh, my gosh, Javier's got his Derby.
Yeah. And I had a crazy – I saw him throwing out the first pitch the other day, and I have this interview with him from Saratoga one year where I asked him what he would have been – wasn't a jockey, and he said a baseball player, and he tried to tell me how good he was, he said he told me if he only had the size of Jose Altuve, he could have made the majors. Well, isn't Altuve the smallest guy in the majors? So only a jockey could say if he was Altuve's size that he would have made the majors.
it's pretty evident the way he it's funny, I had not heard that, but I saw very clearly in that picture with the glove tucked the way it is and the way his shoulders are squared and the form that he showed. It was obvious that he had seriously played baseball.
Yeah, he played some baseball for sure, for sure. And again, I tell that story to anybody, and the first thing you go, wait, Altuve is really small. I'm like, not the Javier Castellano is that.
That's great.
But that, I mean, the Iroquois card, I mean, obviously that's the Willowdale card where I'm going is kind of a more minor card, but still a neat day of racing. But in terms of steeplechase, that Iroquois card is, you know, sensational. And it's got everything it's supposed to have to be the, you know, sort of big finish to the spring season. And got good horses all across the thing. That decision, obviously, and the Iroquois itself at 200,000 being the big thing to talk about.
Well, and dive in. I kind of hit the highlights, including Sean having, you know, a big shot, it seems, with City Dreamer. But, you know, Willie Mullins sends a player.
Yeah, I mean, which is interesting to me. I don't think, I mean, he might be one of the ultimate. He's not coming if he didn't think the horse belonged. He's come before, had a horse who was in line for a big bonus if he won the Iroquois and was second, you know. So he kind of knows what it's like or what it takes, what kind of horse it takes. That Scaramanga, you know, ran at Cheltenham Festival, was fourth in the Coral Cup, you know, and probably has not run or shown that he's been a 3 miler over there, but obviously our 3 miles are a little quicker than their 3 miles. So, you know, you would again think that he's a live horse if he's coming over. And you know, so the tactics to me are going to be interesting to see what happens. That decision is sort of by default a little bit in his last few races been on the lead or up closer than he used to be. I don't know if you want to try to do that at 3 miles, you know, on the favorite. You know, if it were me, I'd try to get left at the start a little bit and then pick it up with about halfway through and see if they could really run and jump with you, but not necessarily carry the whole 3 miles up front. He's going for a little bit of history. No horse has won the Iroquois three consecutive times. And he's trying to pull that off, which would be interesting. A couple have won it three times. Uncle Edwin is, I think, the only horse who's won it three times. And a bunch of horses have won it twice or two in a row. And to see somebody try to do it three is obviously not an easy thing to do.
You know, it's interesting, too, that with Snap Decision, the, you know, the performance in the Temple Gwathmey, his 9-year-old debut, you know, that hopefully signals some, you know, some readiness, because he kind of tailed off obviously after the New York Turf Riders, the Jonathan Shepherd, you know, got beaten the Lonesome Glory. Noah in the Ark makes the seasonal debut here as well for Todd McKenna.
I think that, yeah, I mean, that horse has done nothing wrong in his last few and has shown that he can sort of sit off it and make that short, fast move. And if he gets that trip again, you know, that's the kind of horse that could come running. It's just a little, you know, you're supposed to know, we're supposed to be able to judge some of these things by the weights and whatnot, and they're back at level weights, and, you know, you want to, Snap Decision beat a weaker field while giving away a ton of weight in the Temple Gwathmey, you know, and now he's got a tougher field, but it's level weights, you know. So I don't know, which is where I kind of go back to the tactics of the, what's going to happen, what are they going to do, and who last year kind of pistol whip sort of set the pace, Snap tracked him and then picked it up, you know, going down the back the last time and just ran. He ran up the backside, and you've seen the course today. It's a long, really long straightaway type course, so when they turn the last time up the back, you know, they really get running, and it's fences right in a row. They come up quick, and you know, the horses that handle that, you just, at the Iroquois level, doesn't always look like it in maiden races or weaker races, but at the Iroquois level, they really get running and jumping, you know, and it's pretty, it's something to see, and it really sort of separates players from the non-players at that race. You know, the 3 miles starts to take a toll, uphill climb, and then that course configuration where they go running down over those, I'm not in front of it, but it's four fences in a row, and you know, it really sort of it sorts out the race pretty quickly once they start doing that.
Because of the straight, is this a course that, and I'll ask Sean this too, is this a course that the chasers that perform well at the racetrack, at Colonial and at Belmont, at Saratoga, do they translate to this format well?
Yes and no. I mean, I think that part it's flat in that sense, and there's, you know, it's a pretty much an oval. But the one thing Iroquois has is it's a serious climb over the last, so say, 7 furlongs. I mean, the lowest part of the course would be on the backside, coming out of sort of the what in racetrack terms would be the clubhouse turn, and then the highest part of the course is the finish line. So, you know, it's a serious climb up the hill, and again, they really get rolling and running and down up the backside sort of, and then it kind of becomes a more of a stamina test over the last half a mile, 2 fences, 3 fences type of thing. It's not like Middleburg, which kind of has a lot more undulation and a lot more, you know, they've got a real short stretch there. They've got what is a, you know, there's a couple spots where you take a little bit of a slight right-hand turn to set yourself up for the fences. And it's not like that at all, but it does test horses in terms of the stamina because of that climb. It's just this long gradual pull all the way up the hill to finish. And especially in a race, a 3-mile race like the Iroquois, really, you know, they've got to be quick enough to kind of keep up on that backstretch run and then have enough stamina to get home from there, you know.
Interesting. And I mean, in terms of the uphill, that's not dissimilar to the layout at Far Hills.
Yeah, it's much more gradual, you know, where Far Hills, they sort of drop down on the turn and then come up a short hill toward the finish, where at Nashville, it is a long, steady climb over, it's got to be every bit of 7 furlongs.
Wow. I'm going to...
In the Iroquois, they do it twice. It's essentially 2 laps of the course, you know, to get the 3 miles.
And it's early, you know, the 3-mile portion of the equation, it's early, you know, it's early in the year to be ready to go 3 miles.
Everybody says that, but I think that, you know, I mean, they went 2.5 at the Guelph meet, and this race has always been, they shortened it up to 2.75 during the pandemic, or the height of the pandemic, when the race moved to June. But it's kind of always been 3 miles. It used to be restricted to amateur jockeys and run over kind of natural brush fences. Used to have like a tiny $10,000 purse too. But it's become, you know, the sort of championship race in the spring, and the 3 miles has stuck around in terms of sort of the way to test the horses.
Nice. Well, and of course, Snap Decision coming out of the Guelph meet, Redisian as well for Leslie Young. Those are the exiters from Middleburg. We mentioned Noah in the Ark making the seasonal debut, and a horse that really came along. There's also another first-time North America. This is a horse that obviously Scaramanga will go back with Willie Mullins, but Mortlock has come to North America for Mrs. Johnston and for Bill Dowling. What do we know? What do we know about this Yates 8-year-old?
You gotta love the Yates fire line for sure. 3 miles should be in his wheelhouse. He's won 7 races, which I think you gotta respect. I don't know. Willie Dowling has won the Iroquois as a jockey with Goodnight Shirt, so trying to pull it off as a trainer. Looking at his form, he's got a little more stayer type form than Scaramanga in terms of running the longer races. Which, you know, would make you think that 3 miles would be what he's made for. Again, can he pick it up and run it as fast as Snap Decision is going to sort of run it, or as the whoever wins this race is going to run it, is sort of the question as they sort each other out. But, you know, that form,
perform, you know, like always when the source is going for the Breeders' Cup, they add Lasix a little bit, which makes you think. He certainly knows how to win races. He won 7 out of 19. Makes you think he knows how to do it. He's been keeping some pretty good company in some of those spots too, which is just when you look and see what he's running. And 3 miles should not be an issue. And he won in February, and he's sort of been freshened up and pointed to this, brought over by Mrs. Johnson and Willie Dowling, you know, for a race like this. So
I'll tell you one thing: he's a horse that never misfires. It's unbelievable. He's 19 starts. He's hit the board 18 times in 19 starts, 7, 6, and 5.
Oh, which to me is what you want. I mean, if you're coming over, if you're coming over here to try to take on this level, you want a horse who sort of doesn't have distance questions, he's not going to throw in a clunker, you know, by the looks of it. So, and that's what that it's kind of what the Iroquois, I mean, the Guathmi is in itself a target and a goal for people to go to. The Iroquois kind of just takes it all another step because you get horses like this. You get Willie Mullins coming over. You get this horse, Morlock. You get, you know, just that Scorpion's Revenge has run really well, you know, in his last, that just got beat at Foxfield, which would put him, you know, this is a big step up, but that would put him in really good form. If you're going to try to take a shot at a race like this, you want to come into it the way he's coming into it.
7-race card, and includes a 3-mile Timber as the nightcap, and the Green Pastures as well. $75,000 non-winners of 3 for younger horses, right? A maiden race going 2 1/4.
Yeah, it's a cool card. I mean, nice card. And again, you sort of see the best. Kind of some of the best horses or you see, you know, interesting horses that have either been pointed here from the beginning or sort of ran well enough to go. I mean, the Iroquois maiden is always a tough spot. You know, it's where people go with their best maidens kind of thing, but based on partly on the purse available, the timing of it all, and then just the prestige of it. I mean, Jack Fisher runs a horse in there, Piccadilly, who was with Shug, who's a Farish homebred by Into Mischief, is making his hurdle debut, which is kind of nice to see the Farish name back in some steeplechase circles. Again, I had no idea what to expect. I mean, he was with Shug in Florida this winter, ran in March on the turf. And, you know, but again, Jack, you would not think they would, you wouldn't go to Iroquois maiden. You don't go there to give a horse one, you know, you go there because you like your maiden. It'd be like taking a 2-year-old to Saratoga.
Nice. And, you know, Piccadilly was, over, on the flat, over 6. He's also been gelded, an Into Mischief out of the Giants Causeway mare. Nice.
Yeah, and that last, when going a 1 3/8 the last time, which obviously that was kind of his best race, so distance, you know, would be his thing. Can he, you know, is he ready against some, which are also going to be some pretty nice maidens in there, into horses who've got a little more experience, tried it a few times, and again, that's sort of the intrigue of the Iroquois, is to see horses like that they just stop and look and go, wait a minute.
You know, Sean, I will talk to Sean about Stand With Mo. Here's one that knocked the rust off at Camden in April, and a horse that Christophe Clement trained, an Uncle Mo out of a Belong to Me mare, and might be okay. There's a firster in here for Kerry Breon. There's also that maiden group that goes as the third, and a couple of notable what looked to be some nice potential in this group. Yeah. Tell me about, what do we know about Hill Parker?
He's a Kentucky-based trainer, and they breed, and he also works in real estate, so the horses are sort of I don't know which is a side gig. I mean, horses are probably the side gig, but he might prefer it to be the full-time gig, but jumps up with some horses, won a race in Saratoga a couple of years ago.
And, yes.
This is out of Ready Two Goes, which means this is a brother to I think that's the Saratoga winner. Ready, Set, Goes, I think was her name. Hill used to ride. He probably rode on the Iroquois card way back when. He probably has got the shortest ship of anybody on the card because he's just coming down from Lexington compared to everybody else who left, last night from Maryland and Pennsylvania and whatnot.
A van just pulled up actually minutes ago, and horses were offloaded. Now that you say that, I do remember Parker and having that conversation. That mare is a Lord Avi mare. How about that?
Yes.
And this is a Palace Malice, and was pulled up at got tired and got pulled up at Tryon, and nice. Well, it plenty to dig through here. I printed these out this morning, and there's Go Poke the Bear, Leslie Young, second time over the jumps and a maiden winner. At Charlotte, a horse that was a mid-Atlantic type. Interesting. All right. Nice.
Oh, that's just the best part is the horses just come from everywhere for this.
Yeah.
It's like a major flat day or whatever. You got horses coming in from everywhere, and it sort of makes you think. And then there's sort of the traditional side of it that those barns have been there. You know, there were horses in those barns in the 40s to get ready to run in the first Iroquois. You know. I went to the Iroquois in 78 and 79. I took off school, jumped in the horse van, and rode in a horse van from Pennsylvania to Nashville with my father's horses, which is, that's a long trip. We stopped once in Roanoke, Virginia, I think, to get a sandwich, and then kept on driving. But we did win. We did win the Iroquois twice before it was worth anywhere near this amount of money.
I just.
But he couldn't get it done either. He came back in 1980 and got beat. So he could not win three in a row like Snap Decision Strategy.
Well, do they still retire the trophy if you win three?
Yeah, I don't know if they do that. Or you have to ask somebody down there. I would imagine they're a little reluctant to let it go, but because they are some beautiful trophies that you'll see on Saturday. They've got some history to it.
Well, and Marianne just gave me a map of the course and the identification of that hill, Heartbreak Hill.
Yeah, for some. For others, it's, not at all.
I love it. I love it. Well, Joe, sorry we're not going to see you, but I will see you. We will see you at Pimlico.
You are piling on the miles, aren't you? You haven't been home since when, March?
I was home. I was home. I was home 4 days in February and 6 days in, I guess, was that the beginning of April? Yeah. Yeah.
But yes, I'll see you at Pimlico.
Hi ho. Exactly. Joe Clancy, everybody. Joe Clancy, 65. And I'm sure they'll have it just occurs to me. How did Tom Law and everybody make out with their selections, with their Derby selections?
I don't think anybody had the Derby winner, but there were enough other successes to make it. And I don't know the score. If you're going to get Tom Law on here to pull that out for sure.
We'll harass Law in Baltimore. We'll
like everybody. It's fun to do, right? You start to, especially on, it's like steeplechase fans looking at the Iroquois card. Those two cards Friday and Saturday of the Derby, and it'll be the same Preakness and Belmont and whatever, are just like a dream to look at. It's fun.
Well, this is horseracing.com for that for all that. And is there Iroquois coverage on the website this week?
Yeah, there will be. We'll do our picks tomorrow. Once we were looking for PPs yesterday, but I guess they're finally up today, so we can get to work.
Excellent, Joe Clancy, everybody. Joe, thanks a lot.
All right, thank you. Enjoy it down there.
Don't worry. We're going to see Tina. Tina's all excited. I mean, the fact that she bypassed Derby for this, that tells you everything you need to know. Right?
Yeah, definitely. Stay out of, you know, don't stay in the honky tonks too long.
Well, that she wants to do a little of that. Billy Rappaport and his wife Elizabeth said the Bluebird, to go to the Bluebird for music.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and there's actually some off-the-beaten-path places that are made. You can get to Franklin, which is a really cool little town that has some great places. That Steeplechase Stable Leaper's Fork, that's actually a little village outside Franklin where there's a great music venue there, too.
Look at you. This is new territory for me. The one thing that I realized right away, that this is a town that is a traffic nightmare.
So that's why I go the other way. Go south to Franklin instead of, you know, back towards the city.
Interesting. All right, you're. This is good. This is where we're counting on the Clancys for this.
Travel tips.
Always valuable. Thanks, Joe.
All right, take care.
Joe Clancy. And that's what I'm going to need this, because this is, you know, virgin ground. Unbelievable. I got a very funny, Sean was obviously listening when I said that, I was going to give him a little business, about me, you know, arriving here first. And he says, arrived before me. I was there in 1984. I love it. I love it. So let's take a break, Case. We'll step out and come back. I got to check in with Tony. We got to see Tony's Derby recap. Sean Clancy later. And Rich Eng. Want to get Rich Eng's thoughts as well. See how Rich did. And I think, I expect that we're going to... well, I just heard Rusty apologize. He can't... he is tied up. All right. No problem. We could deal with that. We're hoping to talk to Dwight Hall this morning, right? Yeah, we're going to get Dwight. And get a little bit of Iroquois history. Who did I say? Stu Slagle. I want to see about the Prairie Meadows season as well. The card. Obviously, we'll dig into that tomorrow. And we got to find out what Slip Mahoney is doing. And Elizabeth Doblis has actually got How Great Is Nate cross-entered. This is the horse that inexplicably was boosted out from under Andy Simoff, which we don't understand at all. And cross-entered at Gulfstream. And, you know, Gulfstream, we will have to talk tomorrow about the Royal Palm races that are connected to the juvenile action at Ascot. And we're kind of referring to them as the Wesley Ward Invitational. but, you know, it's not, Wesley's not throwing the kitchen sink at those two races. He's got a Stone Street Kingman Filly, Ocean Mermaid, in the Filly race. That goes as the ninth. And he's got Holding the Line for Steve Coffin, a Soldier's Call colt, in the boys' race. The boys' race goes as the sixth, and the fillies as the ninth. George Weaver, maybe we'll substitute George for Rusty, because George is well represented here. George is heavily involved. And of course, he had the nice win over the weekend. Maybe we'll slot in a George Weaver visit. All right. And of course, Jeff Franklin at 11 o'clock, which is actually 10 o'clock, because I'm on Central Time, unbeknownst to me. I know, ridiculous. Back after this, we're in Nashville at Percy Warner Park for Saturday's Iroquois Steeplechase. Maiden breaker for me, and Iroquois Barbie.
With Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio. Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts breeding program pays huge bonuses.